bigger tools, so they're better.
This meeting of the Health Human Services and Housing Committee will come to order. Senator Sharon, you have Senate File 5, and I believe you have a delete everything. Senator Sharon moves the delete everything A4 amendment to her bill, and this is the first committee, so this would be an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape she wishes. So is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Chair Marty. I appreciate the opportunity to offer the A4 amendment and have it passed because, as you know, there's a great deal of discussion going on about a variety of questions still on the integration of the Affordable Care Act. And in order to simplify our capacity to articulate what we need to do in the future, I've reduced the scope of this bill for now, but assure you that there will be more elements to the Affordable Care Act as it relates to the expansion to Medicaid in the future. But for today, what I'm putting before you is the opportunity that's been offered in the Affordable Care Act. Initially, we were allowed to expand up to 133%, 138% with the income set aside. And we were able to do that through an early process. And the state of Minnesota made the decision to at least cover those that had in the past been covered by General Assistance Medicare, the GAMC program. So we initiated the privilege up to 75% of poverty. What this bill does is move the whole opportunity up to 133% of poverty and 138% of poverty with the provision that allows a 5% set aside for some populations. So if you would like me to, I can go through the details of the bill with you section by section, but I do want to draw your attention to a handout that I think is in your materials. Is that true? It looks like this. And it really articulates and shows you what this bill is doing in terms of the current MA income limits and the proposed MA income limits in this bill. So it shows you that rather than in written language, it shows you in a graph perspective. And then the only other component, a significant component of the bill, is the change to how income is determined through a MAGI process. So with that, those are the two central components of this bill.
So if you'd like to go through the bill, I want to point out we do have letters I think you should have each received from Business Partnership, AARP, and Minnesota Hospital Association in support of the bill. But they should be in your packets. So Senator Sharon, go ahead.
Great, thank you. Section 1 defines the Affordable Care Act in Chapter 25.6B. That's its articulation of language. Section 2 of the bill specifies, it speaks to children who are 19 and 20 years of age who are eligible for medical assistance. The medical assistance program expands it to include that age group. Section 3, and you can look then on the handout that we've given to the practical application of that. Section 3 states that in January of 2014, the income eligibility shall be determined by using MAGI or modified adjusted gross income and the standard income disregard for the following populations, which are included in this: children under age 19 and their parents and relative caretakers, children up to age 20, pregnant women, infants up to age 2, and adults without children. So that's the group that the new income eligibility MAGI formula will apply to. Section 4 removes some unnecessary language. Section 5 specifies the asset limits only apply to parents and caretakers who qualify for medical assistance with a spend down. What this means is that for persons who have medical bills that are articulated and calculated in order to move below the 138% of poverty. That particular group is treated differently in terms of asset limitations than a group that, without those extraordinary medical expenditures, meets the 138% of poverty level. Section 6 talks about increases in MA income eligibility for parents and relative caretakers up to 133% of the federal poverty guidelines. Maybe a simpler way would be to say Section 6 is articulated in this handout. And Section 7 is the transfer, authorizes the transfer of funds. You'll see that the amount of the funds is blank at this time. We're continuing to get the fiscal analysis done on the new delete all amendment, and that will be available for discussions in the Finance Committee. With that very 50,000-foot overview of the bill, I would really be grateful if the committee would offer Commissioner Jessen a chance to speak to this bill.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just wanted to say a few words about what I think this Medicaid expansion, this option we have as a state, will mean for people and providers and for taxpayers in Minnesota, and why I think it is so important. For those of you who have, and I know many of you have followed the Affordable Care Act, you know, and a lot of the promise of the Affordable Care Act is built upon the promise of coverage for more people. What I don't think is widely understood is that half of those people would be provided coverage through an expansion of Medicaid. And for most states, that means a whole lot more people than here in Minnesota, but it's important for us as well. And the Supreme Court, as many of you all know, last summer made this expansion optional for states. But I believe that for our state, exercising that option for Minnesota should be one of the easier decisions this legislature has before it this session, and I just wanted to say why I believe that. You know, one, it provides coverage for an additional 34,000 Minnesotans. These are people without any health insurance today. These are people who, though we do provide health care, but we provide it through emergency rooms. These are people who suffer health consequences because they don't have access to primary care. And frankly, these are people who drive up uncompensated care costs for all of us. Second, I think it's good for state taxpayers because 53,000 people who are currently being served by our Minnesota care population, where we pay half of those costs, will be transferred to medical assistance, where the federal government will pick up 100% of that tab for the first 3 years and at least 90% of it thereafter. So we have substantial savings to the state taxpayers as well. We think it's also really good for those 53,000 people that I just talked about who will be transferred from Minnesota Care to medical assistance. They'll have a slightly better benefit package with fewer copays, more access to long-term care services, but most significantly, they'll not be subject to a hospital cap of $10,000 a year that we have in our Minnesota Care program. And as one can imagine, you spend just 2 days in the hospital and you're over that hospital cap. And while these are very poor people and obviously aren't going to be making up that difference, that medical debt can follow them for a long time. I also think it's good for providers. Providers often pick up the costs of the uncompensated care for those 34,000 folks who are uninsured today who would have health insurance under this expansion. And hospitals particularly are subject to that $10,000 cap on Minnesota Care, and they would not have that cap when this population moves to medical assistance. You know, and if I may, Mr. Chair and members, I want to just add that just adding enrollees to the medical assistance program doesn't mean that we should be about just adding to the status quo. I mean, we certainly at the department, as I think you've seen through our work and we'll see through other legislative proposals, really are trying to continue to work to improve our medical assistance program. You know, we're just rolling out kind of our new demonstration projects and working closely with the hospitals on that is just one example of kind of work to improve it. And finally, I'd like to say I just feel very lucky to live in a state where the benefits of health insurance are recognized. and they are supported by a broad bipartisan group of stakeholders, reflected not only from the letters before you, but in the testimony you will hear today in support of this bill. We've kind of ranging from Take Action Minnesota to the Chamber of Commerce. You know, a lot of people understanding that this really is the right step. And we have certainly seen other states where this expansion has been politically volatile. But I hope that given the broad support that we have here, broad support for the reasons I think I laid out and others will describe in more detail, and our long history of we've already have a history of providing coverage to these poor single adults through Minnesota Care. And this really just enables us to take that a step further and, frankly, have the federal government pick up more of the tab for that. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions from the committee? Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Commissioner, I was wondering if you could briefly, if it's possible, explain the difference in how we calculate eligibility for Medicaid and the MAGI.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll give you kind of a high-level answer to that, and if there are more detailed questions, we have actually the head of our healthcare eligibility here who can answer any more detailed questions that you have. In general, what the Affordable Care Act does is require states, actually, to take steps to make our eligibility and enrollment system for Medicaid much more streamlined. And one of those requirements is to remove asset tests for a lot of people, not for everyone, as Senator Sharon, I think, very adequately described, but for parents, for an example. That we should be, the Affordable Care Act says that, you know, as a matter of Medicaid law now, you should be judging most people just based on their income. And not by asset tests. So that is one of the major changes. It's in this bill. It's required by the Affordable Care Act. There are other changes, too, but so the MAGI, when you hear people talk about that, that's looking at somebody's modified gross income instead of looking at income plus asset tests plus some other things. And, frankly, really people having to kind of go through the asset test, every 6 months often, has really kept a lot of people who otherwise would be on our programs. Just the process has made it difficult for them to enroll and stay on our programs.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Commissioner. Senator Sharon, do you want to go down your witness list?
Yes, please.
Is Dr. Dave Thorson here yet?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please have a seat and identify yourself, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, I'm David Thorson. I'm a family physician from White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm here to talk today about, as representative of the Board of Minnesota Medical Association, I'm also chairman of the Board of Trustees of the MMA. The MMA is a professional association of more than 10,000 physicians and physicians in training throughout Minnesota. I am pleased to be here today to offer our strong support for the Senate File 5, which would expand the medical assistance program for adults up to 138% of poverty, consistent with the Affordable Care Act. The MMA supports this bill for three specific reasons. First and most importantly, Medicaid coverage expansion for adults has been shown to improve health, specifically reduce mortality, and improve patients' self-reported health status. Physicians providing care to low-income patients frequently run into a wall in trying to get patients in for preventive and early diagnosis of problems, and it's not until those patients become significantly ill do we get to see them. So getting this expansion will help us get to see those patients earlier. Second, this Medicaid expansion is a smart financial decision for Minnesota taxpayers. As noted in the governor's budget analysis, this change will generate more than $1 billion in state savings over the next two biennia. And third, Medicaid expansion will help reduce the amount of uncompensated care the physicians, hospitals, and other health care providers provide throughout Minnesota. For these reasons, the MMA strongly urges you to vote in support of this bill. However, despite our support for Medicaid expansion, we still have concerns that I need to share with you. The long-term sustainability of the medical assistance program requires the state to adequately pay for physician services provided to medical assistant enrollees. Minnesota physicians have had their fee-for-service rates frozen for 13 years, and some rates have even seen steep cuts. This inaction by the legislature sends a message to physicians that their expertise and commitment to providing care to medical assistance enrollees is not valued. Just last week, the Commissioner of Human Services noted before Senator Lurie's committee that Minnesota's fee-for-service payment rates to physicians are the 47th in the nation, nearly the worst in the country. Yet to the credit of Minnesota physicians, they have one of the highest levels of Medicaid participation rates in the country at 96%. Today, Minnesota fee-for-service Medicaid pays most physicians approximately 20% below what Medicare would pay for the same services. Physicians, like any business, cannot help keep their doors open if the cost to deliver care exceeds the payment. The MMA is pleased that the governor's budget puts some additional money on the table for payment rates. I would urge the Senate to do the same. If not, many more Minnesotans will have new Medicaid coverage, but will not be able to find a physician who can afford to care for them. Minnesota physicians are proud of the high-quality care delivered in this state and are obviously committed to caring for those in need. The MMA supports this Medicaid expansion. We need to expand the Medicaid payment rates as well to keep Minnesotans the healthiest in the nation.
Thank you, Dr. Thorson. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Next, we have Kate Johansson from the chamber. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 business members, 80% of which are small employers. The Chamber is here today to thank Senator Sharon for her efforts in carrying this bill, as well as to express support generally for expanding medical assistance in Minnesota as fully permitted under the Federal Affordable Care Act. The reason for our support is simple. This is about funding fairness for our state. Minnesota continually gives far more federal dollars than it receives back in federal funding, and this is an opportunity to draw some of that money down to provide care to Minnesotans who are currently financed entirely by Minnesotans' tax dollars at a state level. Future testifiers will certainly be able to provide greater detail than I on the mechanics of how this expansion might benefit Minnesotans, but their testimony will likely distill into three themes: that this could lead to better health for patients, a better budget for the state, and better business for providers who offer care to Minnesotans every day. With that said, the Chamber is sensitive to concerns that federal funding might not be delivered as envisioned in the ACA. And to that extent, we would offer a discussion as appropriate, as also had in the House Health and Human Services Policy Committee, to consider a sunset or other plans for what the state would do to protect taxpayers in the event that we do not receive federal funding necessary to sustain this expansion. And the Chamber would certainly be happy to serve as a resource in that conversation and to contribute further. I apologize, I do have to go to another committee, but I'm happy to entertain questions. And if you have questions subsequently, please feel free to contact me. I believe the committee has my contact information. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thanks, Ms. Johansson. Any questions from the committee? Not, thank you very much. Is the exchange bill in commerce, is it, today? Or?
That is correct. It is in many committees today and always.
And always,
Mr. Chair.
Robert Freeman from Health Partners. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing us to speak today in favor of Senate File 5, the bill to expand Medicaid as provided by in the ACA. For the record, my name is Robert Freeman, representing Health Partners. We're an integrated healthcare company with over 20,000 employees in Minnesota across our health plan, clinics, and hospitals, all devoted to our mission of improving the health of our members, patients, and the community. Because of our role as both a payer and a provider of care, we have a unique perspective on the issue of Medicaid expansion, which is why we've chosen to testify today. Health Partners strongly supports this bill. Our CEO, Mary Brainerd, was part of the Governor's Task Force and the Access Work Group, which recommended the expansion. And we're very grateful to Senator Sharon Bernard and also Senator Lurie and Hayden. We support the expansion for three main reasons. We believe it makes sense for patients. Currently, many people either have no access to health insurance or any limited benefits that co-pays through Minnesota Care. This will help tens of thousands of Minnesotans gain the health security and access to health care that you and I take for granted. It makes sense for our members. Without the expansion, many people would have to purchase health insurance they can ill afford. The expansion will also help keep down premiums in the rest of the market. And finally, it makes sense for safety net providers. As an organization, we provided almost $30 million in uncompensated care in 2011 and a similar amount last year. We were one of just four providers that stepped up to care for the former GAMC population, which the commissioner referenced, after the state ended that program, and we lost millions of dollars doing so. This expansion will help leverage federal funding to alleviate those burdens. We do want to sound some cautions. This is certainly not a silver bullet for providers. How healthcare is paid for is going to change dramatically in the next few years with state and federal reforms. Coverage does not guarantee access 100%, especially with such low provider reimbursement rates in Medicaid, as previously testified to. But we believe this legislation is a great leap forward for our patients, our members, and the community, and we look forward to seeing it signed into law. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Joel Euland from UCARE. And if people want to be ready, Jonathan Watson and then Larry Massa after that. Thank you, Mr. Euland. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Euland. I am the Assistant Director for Legislative Affairs at UCARE. I'm also here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate File 5. A couple of years ago, the Council supported the first Medicaid expansion to 75% of the federal poverty guideline, and we are back here today to support this additional expansion to 138% of the federal poverty guideline. MA expansion will go a long way to address some of the healthcare disparities that we constantly see throughout Minnesota. It will support some of the safety net providers that are out there, and it will provide better access to mental health services for Minnesotans. One example that I would provide as to why we support Senate File 5 is that it will help people who are currently enrolled in the Minnesota Care Program. All too often, our staff at UCARE and the other health plans as well work with Minnesota Care members who are constantly dealing with that $10,000 hospital cap. For a lot of members, they delay access to care or they delay care simply because of that $10,000 cap. This delay often leads to poorer outcomes and higher health care costs, both for the member and for the health plans as well. We believe that these members will be better served through the Medicaid expansion, and I would hope that the committee will continue to support this.
Thank you, Mr. Euland. A quick question for you, maybe better for the Hospital Association. How many of the people that you see who are on Minnesota Care in a hospital visit run over their $10,000 cap?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would have to check back on that. That isn't a number that I have off the top of my head, but yes.
Thank you. Mr. Watson from Community Health Clinics.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Watson. I'm from the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. We represent the 17 federally qualified health centers in the state of Minnesota. We offer primary care, medical, dental, and behavioral health care all under one roof. Roughly 40% of our patients, 70,000 Minnesotans, do not have any health insurance. That's one out of every six uninsured Minnesotan. And roughly 95% of our patients have incomes below 200% of poverty. So clearly, with those two statistics, we're very strongly supporting Senate File 5, the Medicaid expansion legislation before you today. There's a lot of reasons, but the two reasons I'd like to highlight from our patients, the safety net, low-income patient perspective reasons for supporting the bill is, first and foremost, community health centers do a good job of providing primary care to this population. Where we see problems is when our uninsured patients need specialty care. For example, an uninsured diabetic patient getting that appointment with an endocrinologist can be very problematic for that particular patient. That explains a lot of the health disparities in our state. We feel if Medicaid expansion were offered to this population, it would increase the likelihood that they could secure some specialty care services and begin to eliminate some of those disparities. The second piece, again, is also related to healthcare disparities, but when you look at uninsured rates by race and ethnicity in our state, it is very, very alarming. 70% of our patients are from communities of color, and these communities have uninsurance rates that are 2 to 3 times the state average. So we feel, based on the projections we've seen as part of the healthcare reform task force, that just the dramatic reduction in the rates of uninsured in our communities of colors, this will again begin to address the healthcare disparities that exist in our state based on race and ethnicity. The only 2 points I just want to leave you with in terms of some tweaks to the bill or to the system in general, but again, adult dental benefits are not covered under the Medicaid program and probably would not be under this legislation as written. We see this as a huge source of uncompensated care at the community health centers. And we also see it as a frustrating wait for patients, too. The lines to get access to a dental appointment at a community health center can sometimes exceed 2 to 3 months. So with extra coverage, we feel we can share the burden with some of our provider colleague, dentist colleagues to serve this population. And then lastly, I just want to let you know that we are ramping up to serve additional patients. The experience in Massachusetts of the community health centers is they saw a 25% increase after health care reform in their state. So the community health centers are strongly encouraging to support this bill, and we're preparing to serve an increased number of folks as well. Thank you for your time, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. Questions from members of the committee? Thank you very much. Lawrence Massa from the Hospital Association. Then next we'll have Sam Johnson and Christina Wessel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Lawrence Massa, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing 144 hospitals and healthcare systems in our state. The MHA membership is united in strongly supporting Medicaid expansion up to 138% of the federal poverty limit as allowed by the Affordable Care Act. MHA is especially appreciative of Senator Sharon and other policy leaders in Minnesota for making this legislation an early priority. Senate File 5 would provide comprehensive, meaningful coverage for approximately 87,000 adults without minor children, as previously testified. Some of these individuals are currently enrolled or eligible for Minnesota care, while many others are currently uninsured. Moving forward with this legislation is the right thing to do for Minnesota, in our opinion. First and foremost, from a patient's perspective, the Medicaid program provides a comprehensive benefit set with access to a wide range of providers and services across the state. Providing access to effective, preventive, and primary care is a far superior approach to care delivery that relies on the hospital emergency room as the point of entry into the system. From a provider's perspective, the Medicaid coverage will provide a reliable source of payment for services rendered and is likely to reduce uncompensated care associated with the uninsured. Hospitals would further benefit by no longer facing the annual $10,000 inpatient payment cap associated with Minnesota Care enrollees now eligible for medical assistance under the expansion. And, Mr. Chair, our data indicates roughly a third of the Minnesota Care clients that we serve exceed the cap in a given year. From the state's perspective, the Medicaid expansion leverages additional federal money and saves both state general fund and provider tax dollars in the healthcare access fund. While the Minnesota Hospital Association strongly supports this expansion in Medicaid eligibility, our members are also committed to delivery system reforms in the medical assistance program. Many of our members have pursued certification of their clinics as healthcare homes under the 2008 Minnesota healthcare reform legislation, and just recently, 5 of our healthcare systems have signed contracts with the Department of Human Services to participate in the healthcare delivery system, or HCDS, demonstration projects, working to deliver care in a much more coordinated manner, which will hopefully improve services and potentially reduce costs in the future. We urge policymakers to support Senate File 5 and continue our state's leadership and commitment to providing meaningful health care coverage to low-income Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moss. And thanks for the one-third number. Do you have any clue what the average of the one-third who exceed the cap are? I mean, are they like 20, 30,000 or?
Check with my staff. I don't know if we have that number handy, but we can certainly get back to you, Mr. Chair.
But it's significantly over, I assume, because
yes,
bills go up so fast.
Probably. Yes.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Sam Johnson.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry.
I actually have a question for the author, but
okay,
it's apropos right now.
Okay.
Senator Sharon, and you may need to refer to someone, but Mr. Massa referred to expanding coverage to 87,000 individuals. Previously, the commissioner had referenced a 34,000 figure. Are we talking different categories there, or I just wanted to understand what those numbers are and why they're different.
The department come up and talk about these different numbers. I've been getting different numbers as well. I think that they're talking about new enrollees when you're talking about 34,000 is that number that you heard. But I'll defer.
Mr. Chair, Senator DiNino, the 87,000 that I referred to is 53,000 that are currently covered or eligible for Minnesota care, and the 34,000 that are currently uninsured. I believe that syncs with the commissioner's testimony.
Thank you very much. Sam Johnson.
Just to continue, excuse me, Senator yes. Marty, the thing that is important is that those who are going to be going from Minnesota Care to MA, what was being described in this testimony and Commissioner Jessen's is that in the transfer, they also will have an increase in coverage, which helps the hospital association because it removes this cap on hospitalization costs. And these costs, I would be very interested in the association giving us a sort of a measure of what the cost is, as Chair Marty indicated, because it's not calculated, I don't think, into the overall cost savings that that are being described by various analysis of this bill.
So as you're hinting at, they obviously pass it on, and it's a health care cost.
It is health care costs in our premiums, which is estimated to be around $1,000 per individual policyholder.
Senator Rosen,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sharon, I'd be very interested in that, too, because if you're going to be providing a richer, better package, less expensive, I'd like to know how that breaks down and how we're going to be able to do that. So,
apparently the federal government's covering cost.
Yeah, excuse me, Chair. It is, I don't mean to confuse apples and oranges. I don't think it reduces the cost. It changes who is paying for it to the federal government, paying a significantly higher percentage of what the costs are for persons who are eligible for the Medicaid program. What I was referring to before is that there is uncompensated care that is absorbed by the hospital association that was just recently described. When there's underpayment in the rates, one, and two, when there is coverage past $10,000 cap Minnesota Care program, those things now will be covered. And they can be covered at 100% for certain groups of this poor population for 3 years and then gradually down to 90% by 2020. Those uncompensated care costs are, I often think about it, this may not be a fair metaphor, but I think about it as what happens in a retail business when they have to calculate in loss costs because of shoplifting or other damages to products. It's built into the price of the product. And the hospitals do that as well, that when they know how much they're losing against what it is that is the actual cost of provision of care. So they build that into the pricing for everybody, and knowing that that full payment is paid only by those who are self-pay or those who are insured. Therefore, the insurance company knows that's happening, and that is calculated and built into the premium costs. And as those costs increase, it increases the cost of our health insurance policies. So that's what I was referring to.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you for that clarification, Senator Sharon. I'm looking at the total picture of perhaps we need an actuarial assumption on what the state is going to save and or spend with the state contribution going forward with these increased benefits and the federal contribution, which hopefully will be coming through and will, I mean, there's a lot of, I'd like to know if there is a cost to the state in the long run and if we need to do an actuarial on that.
Yes, and that'll be part of the fiscal analysis of the bill. And one of the benefits that you've heard the commissioner talking about is that there's anticipated savings in the state's budget because of the increase of the federal contribution. And because of that, transfer people from Minnesota Care to medical assistance, just cost savings in the Minnesota Care program, that then is a part of the conversation and the dialogue about what we will be able to do in the next proposal, which is from 38% to 200% under what we currently cover under Minnesota Care, or what we might do in a basic health plan. So the these numbers will become available to us. This there is a fiscal analysis being done on this. I've heard some preliminary numbers. I just don't want to lay them out there because we just did a delete all, and it is changing some of those dynamics. But they'll be available for review in finance, which is where this bill will be going next. That will demonstrate that. We'll show that. But it doesn't calculate in these other savings that we're talking about through the Minnesota Hospital Association.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Or is there a question? One more question? I'm sorry. No.
I have a question.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It might not be appropriate at this time, and it might come later with the fiscal analysis that you're talking about, but I understand the importance of leveraging federal funds, which Minnesotans certainly pay a reasonable amount of, and we necessarily would like some of that benefit to come back to Minnesota and not just pay for other states. So I understand that, and I'm well aware of the cost of uncompensated care and how that impacts all premiums. But kind of to Senator Rosen's point, what happens in 2021? You know, the legislation says the feds pay 100% for 3 years, and then 90% phase down to 90% by 2020. And of course, I would like to know, well, what happens in 2021, or what happens if the feds can't pay? What happens to Minnesotans then?
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Isn't that the question under the current system as well? Isn't that the question that the counties ask constantly and that the cities ask constantly? What if any of these forms of government change the level of commitment they have in their partnerships with other units of government? What I can say is that the legislation allows states that the commitment is 90% after 2020. It just goes down to 90% by 2020. The intent is to continue that. And we know historically that the federal government has not changed their commitment to the Medicaid program. So our history indicates that they're a solid partner for us. But even more assurance to me, because of that's always a concern. What if one of our partners, you know, the federal government has done better at partnering with us on this issue than we have with our partners, I think. But I think that the language, the Affordable Care Act language, clearly states that states can withdraw from their participation in this program should the federal government change any of their commitments to the states.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Just a follow-up. So you said think, and I'd like to know for sure we vote on this exactly, is that actually the case, or has that been written yet? I know we're still waiting for some the ACA particulars to come out, but I would like to know for sure if the feds change their financing promise, can Minnesota opt out of this?
Yes,
expansion.
Yes, that's absolute.
It's an absolute.
That's absolute. And
thank
I can
you.
Refer you. I will make certain that you receive the information from CMS that speaks specifically to that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. You've been very patient. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I don't have members represented through me or thousands of businesses, et cetera. But when you guys are talking about someone that went from uninsured to medical assistance to Minnesota Care, that is me. So hopefully I can provide an example for you of people that you will be writing this bill for. So if you would entertain my story a little bit, I'd just like to tell you about myself, just so you can use that as an example for when you decide on these Minnesotans like myself who are going to be on this bill what is best for our future and for our state. So my name is Sam Johnson. I'm here on the behalf of Take Action Minnesota. My story is fairly simple. I'm a college student, graduated from the University of St. Thomas with 2 degrees, one in philosophy and one in music. That was back in 2008. Afterwards, I did AmeriCorps down in Richfield. I was a school teacher for 2 years. After AmeriCorps was over, I put together a couple of part-time jobs, manager at a little co-op over in West St. Paul there, and also a wedding DJ. In addition to that, I put together a couple of internships doing youth gardening, because that's a passion of mine, in the hopes of getting into graduate school over at the University of Minnesota in public policy at the Humphrey Center. I was accepted in the Humphrey Center, but I can't afford it. I couldn't afford many things, one of them being health care insurance. And so I opted to not buy health care insurance because of my budget. And that came around to bite me in the butt last spring when I broke my arm in a bicycle accident. At the hospital, they recommended that I apply for medical assistance. I did so, and because of my low income, I was able to get on the roster there and then afford my hospital visits because of that. As my income increased, I was able to move up into Minnesota Care. And as I continue to move forward, I would like to have the assurance that these programs will be continuing to support myself and people like me as we move up in income, as we move up in helping our state and being good and positive members of society here. So, Commissioner and members of the committee, I would just like to ask you all to please consider, when you're voting to expand this medical assistance, to think of myself and people like me. Without medical assistance, without Minnesota Care, I wouldn't have been able to consider the path that I'm on, preparing myself for graduate school and preparing myself to be a productive member of our society here in Minnesota. And until I get to a point where I can afford my health care independently or through an employee system, I'd just like to have the reassurance that there is a safety net available for me with the system that you are considering today. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Not, thank you very much. Christina Wessel. And after that, we have Mary Jo George and Rod Halverson on the list. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Christina Wessel. I am the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and we provide research, advocacy, and analysis on tax and budget issues that impact low and moderate income families. So I am very pleased that the Minnesota Budget Project is here today to support Senate File 5 as amended, which will improve access to affordable and comprehensive health insurance for 87,000 Minnesotans by expanding eligibility up to 138% of poverty. Passing this bill is a really essential step in expanding health care coverage in Minnesota, and it also has great advantages for the state, for health care providers, and for Minnesota families, because it will save the state money, result in fewer unpaid health bills, and improve health outcomes. First, Senate File 5 will save the state money. Expanding Medicaid to cover nearly all eligible adults will bring in hundreds of millions of dollars, as the committee has just been discussing. The federal government will be picking up 100% of the cost for the first 3 years for all newly eligible Medicaid participants. And although Senate File 5 doesn't have a fiscal note yet, a similar Medicaid expansion proposal in the governor's budget shows that the state will save a total of over $1 billion over the course of the next 4 years, thanks to the federal dollars. We also know that Senate File 5 will mean fewer unpaid health care bills. People need health care, whether they have insurance or not. And many doctors and hospitals continue to treat patients who do not have insurance, knowing they are unlikely to get compensated for those services. Increasing the number of people with insurance by expanding Medicaid will reduce the amount of that uncompensated care, and having more patients able to pay for healthcare services will help control healthcare costs for everyone. and Senate File 5 will improve health outcomes. The Department of Human Services estimates that this expansion will help 34,000 currently uninsured Minnesotans access affordable and comprehensive health insurance. And it will help an additional 53,000 individuals access better coverage than they have right now. This will translate into better health outcomes, stronger and more stable families, as well as a more productive workforce. But we need to pass this legislation in order to see these benefits. It's important to note that if the state fails to expand Medicaid, there will be few affordable health care options for these kind of Minnesotans like Sam. Because Minnesota care, unfortunately, right now is not a reliable option for these individuals. While many may currently qualify, they often can't afford premiums or find the limited benefits don't meet their health care needs. And furthermore, we know that the future of Minnesota care is in jeopardy right now. Some elements of Minnesota care don't meet the higher standards of the Affordable Care Act, and the state is likely to lose the federal funding that we currently have to pay for the program. So without significant changes, Minnesota care is unlikely to continue to be there for these low-income Minnesotans. And we also know that if these people end up in the exchange, private insurance will not be affordable for them. Although some of these individuals will be eligible to receive premium and cost-sharing subsidies in the exchange, private insurance will still not be a viable option. If you look at the family budget for Minnesotans in this income range, they have no income left after paying for essentials like food, housing, transportation, and childcare. They are likely to choose a health care plan in the exchange that has no monthly premiums, but very high out-of-pocket costs. This often ends up as a trap for these low-income people who, despite having health insurance, avoid seeking the medical care they need because they can't afford to pay the co-payments and deductibles. And we also know that very low-income individuals, those below 100% of poverty, are not eligible for premium tax credits or cost-sharing subsidies because they were expected to be part of Medicaid expansion. So simply put, failure to cover low-income Minnesotans under Medicaid would push our state backward when it comes to access to comprehensive and affordable health insurance. We greatly appreciate that Senator Sharon is taking leadership on this issue and that the Senate is acting early in the session, hopefully before the February forecast, to make sure that Minnesota remains a national leader in health care reform. We strongly urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wessel. Is there questions from the committee? Not, thank you very much. Mary Jo George from AARP. She may not be here. Okay. Rod Helverson from MSSA.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rod Helverson. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Social Service Association. Our association is made up of the human service professionals throughout the state, 3,300 members, and also 160 agencies that deliver human services. Primarily, all of our members and the agencies that are members deliver human services to people in need in Minnesota. And we're here today to testify in support of Senator Sheeran's bill, Senate File 5. We have a legislative process through MSSA that starts with the grassroots and ends up with a public policy agenda, and hopefully all of you received that. And one of the items in that is General Policy Statement Number 11. We specifically state and have debated and considered and support the expansion of ME to the 133 or 138% level. We believe it's a wise investment for the state where we save money, and it's also basically a reliable source of payment for services that we need and won't go away. Mr. Johnson, I thought, was a perfect example. There was no intent of him breaking his arm, but the simple fact is he needed the medical care, whether he had the money or the insurance or not. And so all of these services that are provided have to be provided one way or the other. The question is how it's paid for. And we think this is a wonderful way to have a reliable source to expand MA. And the federal assistance is a tremendous asset to the state. So in closing, I would just say that this is basically the first major expansion of the Minnesota safety net since the Great Recession. And I think it's an important step forward. And I want to compliment the authors and the committee members and strongly urge you to adopt Senate File 5.
Thank you, Mr. Halverson. Are there questions from the committee? Is there anybody else who wished to testify in support, or is there anyone who wished to testify in opposition to the bill? Not. Are there questions from the committee? Not. Senator Sharon moves that Senate File 5, as amended by the A4 amendment, be recommended to pass, and this be re-referred to Finance. Is there any discussion on that motion? Not. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Goes on its way to Finance. Thank you. Senator Sharon.
Thank you.
Here until she comes. Welcome to the committee, Senator Rosen. Senate File 39.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Senate File 39. Is the Community Paramedic Part 3. We've been working on this bill since 2011, and for those that are new to this bill, it's a wonderful example of care coordination and healthcare reform. So just a brief summary, if I could, Madam Chair,
yes,
to give a little bit about this bill. We started in 2011 from the Emergency Medical Services, and it's actually one of the first in the nation. So in 2011, we placed into statute what a community paramedic is. And it is basically another tool to expand healthcare coverage for those that are underserved. And it really started out thinking it would be utilized just in greater Minnesota, but it is proven to be very beneficial for the metro area. And what we're dealing with is the people that are affectionately called frequent flyers who are using the emergency room, the 911 system, as their primary care provider. And what we're doing is we the statute in 2011 says that anybody who uses the emergency room three or more times in four consecutive months in 1 year's time is eligible to use this. And it's received a lot of attention. So in 2012, we then made the definition of MA, medical assistance coverage, who would be eligible. So this bill basically is just dealing with the community education, the continuing education part of it. It's very simple. To date, we've had 13 graduates out of Hennepin Technical College in Eden Prairie, and that's pretty exciting. In this industry with emergency medical services and paramedics, there's a 33% growth, one of the largest in this arena that is coming in the healthcare arena, 33% growth for this area. This particular program at Hennepin Technical College received $241,538 from the Minnesota Job Skill Partnership, which is going to be a grant for 24 more community paramedics in the next 3 years. And it's a very, very exciting thing. So I know that we have been able to utilize this, like I said, in greater Minnesota, where people are being able to keep out of testifier. keep them out of the nursing home, keep them out of the hospital. It's a continuum of care. So I'd just like to do a shout out to the Department of Human Services. Has been wonderful working on this bill. Of course, to OG Doyle and Buck Alpin, and to the Minnesota Medical Association, the respiratory therapists, the Minnesota Nurses Association, the community health workers, the public health nurses, and the home health providers. It has been a truly collaborative piece of legislation, and as I said, it's one of the first in the nation. A lot of states are looking at this bill and saying, how can we do this? So with that, Madam Chair, I'm open to questions, but I do have Mr. Alpin here, who would be able to answer any questions. Oh, I should say what the bill does. Okay. The bill basically is extending the continuing ed piece from 48 hours every 2 years for an additional 12 hours to make it up to six. They have to have at least 60 hours of continuing ed every 2 years to keep their community paramedic license. So it's very simple.
Thank you. Did you want to speak to the committee, Mr. Halpern?
Buck McKelpin, Madam Chair. I'm representing the Minnesota Ambulance Association. Sorry about the little delay. Our CEO is here, so we're across the street. Your hearing went quick today. That was nice. Yes, Senator Rosen's helped us with this the last few years, as many of you have. At North Memorial, where I work, we have 10 community paramedics currently deployed in our primary care system. We're seeing great results with it. And as the Senator talked about, the one piece we missed in our last bill last year was the 12 hours of continuing education.
Thank you. This is a program, Senator Rosen, that I think has been very, very proven to be very, very important to our overall goal that we share to reduce the cost of health care by, as you said, changing those expensive care costs from frequent flyers to really earlier intervention. What I can't remember is how the community paramedic continuing education requirement is paid for.
Madam Chair, last year in 2012, we did the MA coverage of it. So we had a whole list of services that were going to be covered. And I can go through that. It's minor medical procedures, lab services, assessment, referrals, and chronic disease care cases. This community paramedic has to work with the emergency medical director, the ambulance medical director, and the primary care provider to come up with a care plan that will be covered by ME.
And for the person who is the paramedic, getting 12 additional hours of continuing education, how are those continuing education credits paid for? Is that through the licensing fee, or is how I can't remember how that was paid for?
If I may, Madam Chair, I defer to Mr. McAlpin.
Madam Chair, that's usually covered by the individual community paramedic or the ambulance service that's employing the community medic. If a company contracted with the community paramedic, they'd usually cover it too. But the majority of our education is ran through our EMS systems.
Okay, great. Are there any other questions? I can assure you this is was a wonderful initiative last year by Senator Rosen, and so thank you for that. And
Madam Chair, if I may say, it was a collaborative effort by many senators, many the industry, and they worked really hard on this. And I'm very proud of them getting together and making this work. And if I could tell you one story about in finance, it was last year, or was it 2 years ago? And I'm explaining this bill, and people can't quite get their hands around it until all of a sudden they understood that their grandmother kept calling the 911 because she was short of breath or she was dizzy, and those are the type of people that we need to address. But there was a wonderful article in the Star Tribune about how it's affecting how the metro area has been able to utilize this program. And that's
So given that there's not any cost to the bill, Senator Rosen moves to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. The bill passes. And with that, we have met our obligations. We are adjourned.